Hey, how's it going, guys? Welcome to the show. Sorry for the rerun yesterday. My computer exploded. Hope everything sounds okay. Chat room guys, let me know if everything sounds okay. Seems like everything here's up and running the way it's supposed to be. Oh, that's got to change right there. I don't know. Boy, I still got a blog entry to write here and some copy pasting to do. Today on the show, we're going to have Matthew Ho and Douglas Lucas. And Matthew Ho, he's a former military guy and State Department guy, but as far as I can tell, he's completely over the empire. I don't hear, and boy, in a time like, 2014, some of our very best, most anti-war type writers start finding weasel words and reasons why, maybe a little bit of intervention here or there might be okay. But he doesn't seem to have fallen for that. And he knows a lot about the subject matter. And of course, if you're familiar with today's news at all, there's a crisis in Pakistan as at least 141 people have been killed, 132 of them children, or at least teenagers, you know, minors, which is counts. Line up and shot by the Taliban, or I don't know how many of them were lined up, shot by the Pakistani Taliban. And then some teachers, too, is at a school, a military school. And so we'll be talking with him about what all that means. And then Matthew Ho, whoops, I just said that. Let me figure out a way to spin that. Matthew Ho will be followed by Douglas Lucas. And I really don't know too much about him, except for he's from a thing called Rise Up. And he's in Dallas right now covering the sentencing hearing. Or the sentencing. I guess the hearings are over. The sentencing for, I don't know how many hearings count in the sentencing process. Anyway, he's being sentenced today, Barrett Brown. The journalist, Barrett Brown. And Douglas Lucas is on the case for us there. Long-term fans of the show might remember a couple of interviews that I did with Barrett back in 2010 and 2011 about WikiLeaks and about the Arab Spring and Anonymous's role in the Arab Spring. And I think I interviewed him twice. And I've been absolutely loving his essays that he's been writing. He's got a thing in D Magazine, which is a magazine up there in Dallas. It's a regular column called Barrett Brown's Review of Arts and Letters in Jail. And it's his column that he writes from federal prison. And he's such a talented writer, you know, it's really fun stuff. But anyway, at one point, they were trying to put him in jail for 100 years. For 100 years. Accusing him of all kinds of things. Now, they've dropped most of that. They dropped the charges that could have led to that. But he still is facing some time. I don't know exactly. I admit I've been falling behind on the story. But I guess we're going to find out. I mean, he should be let go with time served. The fact that he's even in there is kind of a joke. It ain't a joke to him. But they're pretending he's some kind of threat. Because he threatened to dox an FBI agent. For those of you who are not familiar with dox as a verb, that means basically Google the crap out of somebody and find out everything you can about them and put it online. Right? That's to dox someone. And so he said something like, "Ooh, am I going to get you," to an FBI agent. But that's all he meant. And it was obvious that was all he meant. He's like, "I'm going to find out your credit score." And then they try to pretend that that was some kind of violent threat against the agent and his family and whatever. Who knows? And they went after his mom because he stashed a laptop at her house. And who knows? Whole thing's a disaster. And the guy's just a journalist. They try to pretend that he was a hacker, that he had broken some law and violated somebody's property rights or crossed some line. But no. He's just a reporter working on stories about things that hackers were finding out, which is an entirely different thing. if you take my meaning. And anyway, Bear Brown, he's being sentenced today in federal court in Dallas, Texas, and I guess we'll see what happens. Well, you'll know by the end of the show, probably. Douglas Lucas, I'm expecting to hear from him. He said he expects the thing is scheduled to be over by then. It's possible it could go longer. I did see, if you're following on Twitter, or if you want to follow along on Twitter, where the hell is it? I had it here. Here's a, God dang it. Let me find it. It's a Bear Brown hashtag. Bear Brown hashtag. Is it just BB? Oh, man, I'm going to see it. Oh, it's Free BB. That's what it is. Hashtag Free BB. You can follow that on Twitter right now, and you'll get all the latest breakingest news. Oh, make sure to hit all, not just top. So there you go, Free BB on Twitter if you want to follow for the breaking news. That's where it's sure to break first. ScottHorton.org, I keep my archives there. Twitter.com/ScottHortonShow, that's where I say angry things about things that I'm angry about. And the Tom Woods Show, that's where I did some talking about the torture report. If you want to hear about that, Tom Woods interviewed me on Friday for his Friday show. And I regret two things about it, so I'll fill in those gaps. Now, what is that some kind of French saying about the wisdom of the staircase? It really doesn't apply here, because that's when somebody insults you, and then you think of the great retort later, which is, that doesn't really count. But anyway, it's one of those things I went, oh, you know, I really meant to say this, and I really meant to say that on Tom's show, and I kind of dropped the ball. So the first thing of it was, I gave a couple of throwaway lines to torturing these guys into implicating Saddam. But I didn't really explain that. No, yeah, that was really what was going on, as Larry Wilkerson explained on the show, that they weren't looking to stop Al-Qaeda attacks against America. They were looking to torture Al-Qaeda guys into pretending they knew Saddam Hussein and had been provided aid and comfort by his government. And so that was a huge part of it, to lie us into war, and so to torture us into war. So I didn't really get a chance to explain that and the importance of that. There's no mystery to it. And then the other thing was, when he asked me about some of the tortures, I was not on point to explain. I should have kind of gone down the list, you know, of the beatings, of people being shackled to stone walls and chained and hung from the ceiling like a Far Side cartoon or something, right? Like you'd think of some medieval torture dungeon, the guy chained to the wall, naked, freezing in darkness for months sometimes. At a time, and of course, beaten in the sleep deprivation, which is, you know, go back to any torture regime in history, from the Inquisition to the communists, the Nazis, the Americans. Sleep deprivation, that's an old-time classic. Anyway, I should have had a better list. I should have explained it in a better way. Because I felt like I didn't really make it clear that, or like, you know, on the waterboarding, I could have explained that. No, really, they drown them until they're almost dead. They drown them until the doctors are monitoring the oxygen sensors on their fingers. And when they're in the death spiral, that's when they bring them back to life. And that's according to the doctors. They explained the procedure to the Red Cross and all this. It came out in their report back in 2009, I'm going to call it, I think. And so that's what they're doing. It's not dunk them in the water a little bit. It's drown them to death. It's an exquisite form of torture, says John McCain, a victim of it. The only Republican who's anti-torture. What does it take to get a Republican to oppose torture? You got to torture him. And then he'll be like, whoa, I don't know, that's pretty bad. Otherwise, they're all for it. The entire American right, 50% in the latest poll. The entire right. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org.
U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at CouncilForTheNationalInterest.org. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, guys. I'm me. I'm here. Again, sorry about missing the show yesterday. I had a computer explode. The same one again. But anyway, so. I spent a lot of money putting together, well, relative to my bank account, a lot of money, maybe not to you, putting together a brand new one. I think everything's okay. Right, chat room guys? Everything sound all right? Anybody in the, I see names. I see chat room people. Tell me. I guess nobody's emailing me to tell me I sound terrible, so I guess everything's working. Yeah. Help defray computer costs at scotthorton.org/donate if you're into that kind of thing. You might be. I take bitcoins. I love taking bitcoins. All right. Yeah, man, so check out. I got a ton of things to say. Oh, I meant to end that segment with saying, yeah, so anyway, my pretty good interview on the Tom Woods show about the torture thing is at TomWoods.com, the great Thomas E. Woods. And he said he got at least one email saying that was the best show he'd ever done. This guy listened to all of them, including previous interviews of me. So that's pretty nice vote of confidence there. That's interesting. Okay, so that's out of the way now. Later on, I'm sorry, I'm not starting and really covering the Pakistan thing right now because I'm going to have an interview about it in about 45 minutes kind of a thing. So let's put that off. There's so much more to cover there. So that goes to the side. The Sydney thing, I don't really have too much to say other than I blame George Bush, of course. You know, he could have fired Dick Cheney. He could have demanded that he resign. He could have not hired him in the first place. Anyway, he didn't have to delegate any authority to him whatsoever. And he didn't have to go along with the things that he said. And I know that the president's just a figurehead, but that's all right. He's still the one with the authority, and he's still the one that makes things happen. And the truth is, the war on terrorism could have been over by this time, 2001. There were only about 300 Al-Qaeda then. Most of the war was fought by the Treasury Department, just locking their money down, shutting them down that way. And then the CIA pointed their laser designators at the Al-Qaeda guys on the ground, and the Air Force dropped daisy cutters on their heads and killed them. They told Bob Dreyfus back then, you want to find Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, you're going to need to bring Q-tips. They were all already dead before the Army really got there en masse. I mean, the Marines were... there were some Marines there, but really the spies in the Air Force got most of the job done. It was just Bin Laden and his few dozen closest associates. And then Bin Laden, Zawahiri, and about maybe two or three dozen, some say, I don't know, what, 80 people escaped to Pakistan. That was Al-Qaeda in 2001. So if George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld and Thomas Franks had not, hired Haqqani and Hekmatyar to help corner Bin Laden on three sides and leave him with an open escape route to Pakistan, which I believe was deliberate. There were Marines nearby, and they were not told march, damn it. And, yeah, it's a mountainous area, but still, I don't care. Climb. What the hell are you talking about? Forward march, right? All that. They were like 20 miles away. Anyway, I believe they let him go deliberately because he makes such a great boogeyman. See if we can confuse Osama the beard with Saddam the mustache. Americans don't much care the difference, so go ahead and push that further agenda while Osama's still on the loose. Remember, even when they found Saddam, they go, "We got him!" as though they had got Osama, who had attacked America. Says, "Oh, Saddam, who had attacked the Iraqis." Well, we attack Iraqis all day. What's wrong with that? I don't understand. The American people said, well, kind of deflated. Oh, I thought you were saying you got the guy. They learned how to differentiate once it was too late. They kept this war going this whole time. There's too much money in it, too much power in it. And so they've turned a war against a few dozen pirates, international outlaws exiled in no man's land on the ass end of the planet Earth, exiled in the Durand Line. And they've turned it into a global movement. And it's a massive movement in North Africa, across Mesopotamia, into Syria and the Levant, and obviously all over the Arabian Peninsula, down in Yemen, and it's just spreading and spreading. And the only real disagreement between them is Al-Qaeda or ISIS. Whose loyalty do you choose first, basically? But where there were dozens and dozens of these guys, there are now thousands and thousands of them. Now, that doesn't mean most of them are a threat to the United States, but still. And then it's the same thing with these lone wolves. In Europe, in the United States, and now in Australia, you have these people. You know, this guy in Australia was Iranian. Now, America has sanctions and all kinds of economic war against Iran, but really we fought a war for them in Iraq under George W. Bush. And it's not like we've been at war with Iran, really, slaughtering Iranians in the worst kind of way like we do to the Iraqis. And this guy was an Iranian, and apparently he's some kind of kook, too. He had converted over to Sunni from Shia Islam, which, not that that's necessarily a kooky thing to do. What the hell do I know about Islam? Nothing, but not too much anyway. But also, he was, you know, implicated in a murder rap. He had numerous charges of sexual assault. That was the first stuff I heard about him anyway. It was like kind of, he was just a criminal. So anyway, he's willing to do impulsive things. And in his mind, he's put himself on the side of the people that America's killing. It's the same kind of thing with Faisal Shahzad that blew up the Times Square thing. And to me, Faisal Shahzad is the, you know, he failed to blow up Times Square is what I mean to say. He tried to in 2010. And he's a perfect example of this because he's not a psychopath. He's not like a raving lunatic, and he wasn't a religious nut. He was living the American dream. Owned a home, had a professional career. Had a wife and, you know, two new vehicles and all this kind of crap like everybody wants so bad. And then he went home to Pakistan and he saw the aftermath of a drone strike. And all the pain and the suffering and the dead and the innocents and the wailing of the grandmothers and the et cetera. You could imagine if somebody had drone striked your neighborhood, what it might be like. And he decided, just like a good patriotic young American would do, he decided to join up the fight. On their side. And it's the exact same thinking that goes through the mind of an American who joins up to go fight the terrorists. It's the exact same mentality. It's obviously deeply flawed. I ain't apologizing for it. And that guy was trying to attack women and children. But you know what he told the judge? When the judge said, "You're trying to attack women and children," he said, "You attack women and children with your drones every day, all day." The judge had said, "Did you even look around? You look around, see if there's women and children around?" Times Square, he said, "Your drones don't look around for women and children. They blast women and children." It's the same thing, judge. Judge gave him life in prison, as he should have. But you have to concede that there was nothing illogical in what he was saying anyway. Hey, Al Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at WholeFoodComplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle, containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at WholeFoodComplete.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. All right, we're going to have to put that one off for just a minute. God dang. So Cheney went on Meet the Press to justify the torture regime, and I encourage you to watch it or read the transcript. I actually just read it myself. Yeah, it's quite important because what happened was Dan Frumkin at The Intercept, he wrote a thing basically saying Dick Cheney's going to eat Chuck Todd for breakfast if he doesn't do exactly what I say. You know, Chuck Todd, he's a pushover. If you're familiar, the NBC reporter who thinks that all news is in, you know, the horse race politics on the precinct level. That's his entire mindset kind of a guy. And but so Frumkin kind of pre-shamed his ass and said, look, man, you going to let Dick Cheney go on there and walk all over you or what? And so, yeah, mostly. But he pushed back a little bit. And he confronted Cheney with the definition of torture. Try to define it. What's the definition of it? And he said, oh, well, being a victim on 9/11 is torture. You know, burning to death on 9/11. Like, okay, well, that is torture. But, yeah. So, but he wouldn't define it in any other way. It was only a thing that Americans could be a victim of that one day. And that's it. And refused to accept any other definition. And then Chuck Todd said, yeah, but we prosecuted the Japanese for waterboarding. And he said, no, we prosecuted him for all this other stuff. And then he brought up the rape of Nanking and all this other stuff. But yeah, I mean, some of the charges, though, were waterboarding. It's right there in the charging documents. It's right there in the historical record. Everybody knows that. Ask John McCain. He'll tell you about it. And then when he's asked about, is it Hamid Gul, who was frozen to death, chained in the salt pit torture dungeon outside of Kabul, Cheney said, yeah, 9/11 again. But yeah, I mean, but that was a guy who, he didn't do it. He wasn't even in on it. He didn't know anything about it. Yeah, 9/11 anyway. And so anyway, it's clear that this is a rehearsed talking point. He's not having a discussion at all. This is just his rehearsed talking point that he's discussed, you know, with his daughter and his lawyers about this is what you have to say. And then, you know, try to get back to it worked, and all of that. Which, of course, even the current director of the CIA, who was in on the torture program then, John Brennan, it's like Barack Obama brought this guy from the outside because he was anti-torture or something. He worked with George Tenet at the highest level while Tenet was running the torture program. And even he concedes that there's no evidence that Landay has a great write-up about McClatchy. Even he concedes there's no evidence that they got any information from, you know, necessary information for preventing attacks from torture that they didn't already have from something else or that they couldn't have gotten easily another way. Here's Landay. CIA Chief Brennan concedes no proof. Brutal methods led to key intelligence. Also, Senate report confirms CIA had black sight at Guantanamo. Hid it from Congress. This is also McClatchy. Carol Rosenberg from the Miami Herald down there at Guantanamo Bay. And this is partial confirmation of the other Scott Horton's work in Harper's Magazine and the Seton Law School guys who did all the legwork on it, too, about Camp No, which we now know was called Penny Lane, which was a secret CIA black site down there at Guantanamo Bay. And other Scott Horton has given us a great reason to believe that in the summer of, I believe it was July 2006, three men were murdered there. And the government lied and pretended that it was a suicide and called it asymmetric warfare. And speaking of which, David Henderson, the wartime economist who writes for antiwar.com, he's from the Hoover Institution. He's a conservative libertarian economist. From Hoover and actually teaches economics at the Naval Postgraduate School. And he questioned the admiral in charge who claimed that that was an asymmetric attack against America. Three guys killing themselves just to make us look bad in an asymmetric attack against us. And David Henderson is telling that story today at antiwar.com. Please look at that. But here, Carol Rosenberg has found in the torture report where they, in fact, do confirm that there was a secret CIA black site there, Camp No, a.k.a. Penny Lane, a.k.a. the place where these guys were murdered, like in the other Scott Horton's great journalism. Then there's this another great story in McClatchy. This one is by Matthew Schofield, and it's about Al-Masri, Khalid Al-Masri. Now, Mar Arar and Khalid Al-Masri, I always get them confused because they both have the same story. They were both completely innocent, mistaken identity, I mean, of any association. I'm not saying anybody deserves to be tortured, but they're completely just mistaken identity, bad information, completely innocent men scooped up by the CIA and renditioned to Syria to be tortured by Bashar al-Assad, who used to work for Bill Clinton and George Bush, torturing and killing jihadis back before Obama decided he would prefer to back the jihadis against him. Amazingly, but still, that's what the Israelis want, so that's how it goes. But anyway, yet no apology. Now, Mar Arar, I follow him on Twitter, and at least he has a place where he can vent and say, look at these bastards and the things that they do and the lies that they tell. And yet, Al-Masri, and I don't know what else has happened to Mar Arar. Maybe he's okay, maybe he's not, I don't know. But this article is about how this poor guy, Al-Masri, who was also held at the Salt Pit torture dungeon outside of Kabul, has been absolutely destroyed. He's lost his entire family, his wife and his children and all of his friends. He's in a Western-leaning Arab nation, which means Jordan, I guess. And the last time his lawyer saw him, he's an absolute disaster. They tortured the crap out of him. He was just some poor schmuck. Nobody ever even told him sorry. He was a grocer, a German citizen. And the German government, of course, completely failed in every way to stick up for this guy's rights, too, because that's what the empire insisted on. And time short. Rebecca Gordon. I interviewed her last summer. You might remember. She's a professor, liberal professor somewhere. I don't care. She wrote this great thing, man. It's at antiwar.com under Tom Engelhardt's name. And it's at tomdispatch.com. It's Rebecca Gordon, The Torture Wars. And she makes some very important points here, and I'm going to try to blast through them real fast here. The most important question is when torture worked, according to our media and our people. And she completely destroys that. No, that's not the question. I mean, the answer to it, to be brief, is it doesn't work to find out good, relevant data for stopping attacks against people. It does work for getting people to tell useful lies that you need them to tell. Ask the North Koreans, whose methods they copied from Mao Zedong's Little Red Torture Book, and which America copied them in the survival, evasion, resistance, escape training, which they then reverse engineered and turned into America's torture program. Get that? One step removed from Mao Zedong's Little Red Torture Book, How to Get American Captives of North Korea to Tell Lies. This is what you do to them. That was the thing that they did. And so the real important question is this evil? Is this barbarism? Is this civilization? Or are we animals, or what in the hell are we talking about here, as though this is debatable at all? Torture. It's not. 150 million Americans, you're all wrong. Wrong. That's not an opinion. That's just true. In fact, you all suck. Suck. 150 million Americans. Oh, well, gee, politicians that I kind of like are pro-torture, so that means I am. Shut up. Yeah, I know. That's all that determines what you believe. Next lie that she debunks is that the torture ended when George W. Bush left office. She brings up Appendix M under the Army Field Manual, which was rewritten to allow for sleep deprivation, temperature deprivation, not so much the stress positions, I guess, although I don't know. And, of course, there's Scahill's reporting about the secret site in Somalia and the torture that goes on there. And then she also talks about domestic torture here in America as well. Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback.
Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. The show's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. Coming up, Matthew Ho on Pakistan, Afghanistan, maybe some Islamic State stuff, too. Then Douglas Lucas. Oh, man, I need to check my free Barrett Brown feed here. Uh-oh, 192 new results. I don't know if we know yet. Let me see here. No, I don't think he's been sentenced yet. We're still waiting. All right, we're gonna try very hard to get Douglas Lucas on at the bottom of this next hour. It's gonna work, I'm pretty sure. To talk about Barrett Brown. All right, now. I guess I talked about the terror war and the torture and all that. I never really get to quite wrap up what I'm saying because of the breaks, but you know what the hell I mean. So now I will begin our lawless police state section today with Jeb Bush is officially running for president. Now, exploratory committee means he's running for president. It's on. How many years ago did I tell you it's going to be Jeb? A long time ago. Not just that he would run, but that he'll be the president. Just watch. And why does that go in the law and order police state section on the show? Well, wonder. Okay, second on the list in the police state section today is Sandy Hook parents suing Bushmaster for making AR-15s. They should have known that an AR-15 could be used in an act of violence. Yeah, I'm afraid that's not going to be good enough for your lawsuit there. And now, I just mean good enough for me. Hey, who knows what a judge might do? Who knows what 12 idiots on a jury might do? But I'll tell you, here's how you can hold a gun manufacturer liable for harm inflicted by that firearm. If it malfunctions, if it truly has a flaw in its engineering where it goes off when it is not intended to and hurts someone that way. Otherwise, the responsibility is on the person doing the killing. That's what guns are for, killing people. Suing based on the theory that the manufacturer of a gun could have, should have known that someone could kill someone else with that gun is completely stupid. So, you know, I'm very sorry for what those parents are going through, but they're barking up the wrong tree with this. Bushmaster AR-15 rifles are made for killing people with. That's right. And you can also shoot targets with them. I encourage you to shoot targets with them. But they are weapons. Yes, that's right. I didn't think that anybody thought that that was in dispute. But hey, I guess, you know, if you're trying to get paid, try and get paid at the expense of the rights of everybody else. And what does that mean? If every gun manufacturer becomes civilly liable for every violent crime committed with a gun. It means all gun manufacturers in America are out of business. Now, how's that going to work? You can find a crime for every brand name. Doesn't mean that they're responsible. Give me a break. Or, in fact, even if you think that, no, you know what, in your eyes, they are 10% responsible, or whatever it is. That's how juries decide things, right? They try to put a number on a quality. You're 10% responsible. You're 40% responsible. Well, still, the law's already decided that they have the right to manufacture and sell firearms in this country because we have the right to buy them from them. So, and own them. So there you go. Kind of silly. Who knows how far it might go in the court? It might go real far, but I just don't know.
Okay, now, the rest of the cops section is Will Grigg on his Facebook page posted, and you can find, I retweeted it today, you can find it on my Twitter page. Someone sent it to me. It's Iyanna Jones's mother, grandmother, crying on the stand in court. And you're familiar with her, Iyanna Jones? Iyanna Jones, I think it is. SWAT raid. They're filming an episode of The First 48. And so the cops were showing off for the cameras and did this nighttime raid into the wrong house where the person they were looking for was not there. I believe it was a duplex. I don't even know if he was home at the other residence, in fact. But anyway, cop came in the door, shot a 7-year-old girl right through the head. As she sat up on the couch, she was sleeping on the couch with her grandmother, and sat up on the couch. And the cop lied his ass off and tried to blame it on the grandmother. Oh, she ran up and grabbed the gun, and then it went off, and all this crap. So he's a liar and a murderer of this little girl. And of course, this is one of the few exceptions where a cop is indicted for anything at all, and they let him go. In fact, I think it was the jurors let him go. He had a hung jury, and then on the second hearings, they ended up just dismissing it or some kind of crap. Whatever loophole. Innocent 7-year-old girl. And there's, you can watch the footage. I guess I won't play it on the air for you, man. I don't know. She kind of deserves the respect, but there she is screaming on the stand. Why did you come in my house like that? It's her house. Her house. You know, like every Englishman is a king in his own castle. Yeah, same thing goes for little black ladies in Detroit, supposedly. That's her home. And she's crying, she's screaming, crying over her dead granddaughter, saying to him, why did you do this? Tell me why. Tell me why you came in my home that night. At night. You know, like the NKVD. The communist secret police. Kicking in people's doors in the middle of the night. You know, like in a totalitarian police state where they can murder your 7-year-old granddaughter and get away with it if they feel like it. Where the judges and the prosecutors and the jurors will all conspire together to provide immunity. If it 1 in a million chance gets as far as a petit jury, which is almost unheard of. And then speaking of which, Mike Brown, according to the new poll, 2/3 of Americans support Darren Wilson being no-billed and being let go for the killing of Mike Brown. Oh, isn't that interesting? Because I got right here the story that broke today, I think. I don't know when it broke. At the Smoking Gun, they got the documents. They've unmasked witness number 40, who said that Mike Brown, you know, bent down like a football player and charged. You can ask Sean Hannity. I saw a clip on MSNBC of Sean Hannity saying that 50 times over. Oh, he charged him. Look at this witness as he charged him just like a football player. It's completely made up testimony by a proven liar. And the Smoking Gun has unmasked this liar. Her name is Sandra McElroy, and she completely concocted her story long after the fact. And this was the story that said, see, Michael Brown's story makes sense. Darren Wilson's story makes sense. And Michael Brown's friend, I forget his name, Johnson, his story is obviously lying, evil perjury. But nope, she's the one who is perjuring herself. Darren Wilson murdered Mike Brown, and he got away with it. And 2/3 of the American people, 2/3 of the American people have chosen the side of the police state against the unarmed, dead black guy full of bullets, who, according to 16 witnesses, had his hands up. 16 witnesses told the grand jury he had his hands up. His friend said the cop was shooting at him, thought he shot him in the back, was shooting at him down the street. We know fired 12 shots total.
And then Brown turned around and said, okay, stop shooting. I don't have a gun. I give up. Pow, 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 pow. And then died because he was murdered to death by Darren Wilson. With a 2/3 supermajority American stamp of approval on it now, according to the latest McClatchy-Marist poll. I'm not sure if, yeah, and let him burn in hell was one of the multiple choice answers that you could give too, but I'm sure that would have gotten at least 50%. Congratulations, America. You're a bunch of sickos. You really suck. And what does that mean? That means that the entire right, which is unanimous on torture, right? 50% of the Americans, entirely unanimous that they are for torture. That means all of them and a good percentage of the liberals also are for the execution of Mike Brown too. The liberal whites. In America in 2015. Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs. The first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. It's the Scott Horton Show. And, before this interview, I'm sorry, I have to say this. I forgot to mention this in the police state section there. Read this story at Vox.com. It's by German Lopez. After police killed John Crawford at Walmart, they threatened his girlfriend with jail. That's the headline. John Crawford, Walmart, girlfriend, jail. And what happened was, remember, they killed the black guy at Walmart who had a BB gun that he got off the shelf at Walmart. He was going to buy it. And he was just standing there. And the video was released, and of course it contradicted the cops' version of it. They just ran right up and shot him to death. Well, in this story, they went and arrested his girlfriend. She wasn't even there. They went and got his girlfriend, and then this is their interrogation of her where they're trying to force her to, quote, admit that it was his, that it was a real gun, and that it was his, and that he brought it with him. They were going to use that to corroborate whatever drop gun they had come up with, and they were threatening to put her in jail if she wouldn't admit that he owned the gun and that he brought it with him to the Walmart. So they're murderers, and they're liars, too. Isn't that funny about the cops? How all they do is murder people and lie about it? Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So, our first guest on the show today is Matthew Ho. He's formerly an official in the State Department, and before that was a Marine. He's now at the Center for International Policy, and he writes regularly also at the Huffington Post. Welcome back to the show, Matthew. How are you doing?
Good, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing real good. Appreciate you joining us back on the show today. There's lots of things to talk about with you. I guess most I want to talk about Afghanistan, but if we could please start with the horrible tragedy, the massacre, terrorist attack by the Taliban in Pakistan this morning. Latest I have 141 killed, 132 of them children.
Yes, it's really quite horrific. But we can't let this be seen as a singular event. We have to look at it against the scale of horrors that have been taking part in that country, for many years now. Yeah. And, we have to view it as such, as this is the consequences of war. This is what occurs when we help foster, when we commit to policies that are going to play one group of people off against another group for our own political aims. Organizations like the Pakistani Taliban win. These extremist murderous groups are the ones that profit from us playing Punjabis versus Pashtuns or Shia versus Sunni or whatever, sect you want to play off against one another. This is the consequence. Yes, 132 dead children. It's quite horrific. I will say one thing, though, Scott. that I, and maybe your listeners have noticed this too, just having had CNN on this morning and then even Al Jazeera America and a couple other stations, is the level of attention this story is getting compared to the story of the previous day with, in Australia with the lone gunman there who held the and I find that, you know, nothing was on television yesterday besides the Australian gunman. And today, this story, it's leading off the news, but it's done after 3 minutes.
Right.
And I think that's really instructive, too, for how we see the world. And I have to come back to it. Is it because the Australian, two Australian victims were white, but these 132 children are brown?
Yeah, of
that
course.
It stokes up this. It really is quite amazing to me, the difference in the coverage.
Yeah. You know, if you haven't seen the new movie Nightcrawler, with Jake Gyllenhaal, you'll really like it.
Okay.
I won't spoil it for you, but it's, yeah.
Okay.
And yes, of course, that's exactly what it is Australia is part of the British Commonwealth, the former empire, our empire now. They're sort of like Canada or whatever, kind of America Junior. And so, yeah, Americans are expected to put themselves in Australian shoes, but into the shoes of Pakistanis, even school children. Meh,
yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah, it's horrific and it's scary.
It's true.
It doesn't merit the attention and the sympathy that the Australian occurrence did.
Right.
Nor does anything else. He just had a guy kill five of his family members in Pennsylvania. He's on the loose right now. And, you know, that doesn't really merit that much attention.
Well, but they're underplaying that one for a different reason. It's because he's a PTSD case, a consequence, blowback from this war, backdraft, blowing up in America's face. Just like was predicted before the wars ever started, Matt Barganier wrote, how many Timothy McVeighs are going to come home from this Iraq war? You know, about just the level of crisis these guys are going through. A lot of times, you know, I live 100 miles south of Fort Hood, the real capital of Texas, and mostly they just die on their motorcycles at 150 miles an hour rather than killing other people, but still, you know, these guys are wrecked. Man, I know you know a lot about that too, but this guy's one of them.
You know, that point about motorcycles, Scott, you are absolutely correct. In the months after our Marines returned home from the invasion of Iraq in 2003, so the Marine Corps sent troops over there. After a few months, the invasion was over. We brought all the Marines back and the Army stayed. We had more Marines die in motorcycle accidents in those first few months coming home from the war than died in combat in Iraq. It is. These guys are wrecked. You can't go back to the way it was. And that's what you want to do. And it's just so difficult. And unfortunately, you see these occurrences like you see in, and this is the effect of war, right? And whether it's an American who's come home from war and massacres his family in Pennsylvania, or the consequences of war in Pakistan, where, you know, 132 children are now dead, after whatever happened in the rest of that country, since the Pakistani army has been on the offensive the last few weeks, God knows what type of atrocities have occurred because of that. I mean, these are the consequences of war. And so the fact that we act on you know, CNN or Fox or MSNBC, they act aghast and surprised at these things is just, it's really quite silly.
Well, now, so talk about the Taliban and how much difference it makes. I mean, there already was a Pakistani Taliban and, you know, Obama, the way I understand it, they made a deal that the CIA can target Al-Qaeda refugees hiding in Pakistan. If you'll target the Pakistani Taliban leaders that we want, you know, they kill their enemies for them and they'll let us kill our own enemies there, that kind of thing. But so can you explain a little more about how you think that's really made matters worse? Because there already was a Pakistani Taliban anyway, right? Up there in the SWAT Valley and the tribal territories?
Yeah, I mean, but if you go back to 2001, if you were to talk to, you know, a Pakistani army officer in 2001, prior to 9/11, and you asked him, do you have insurgencies in your country? He would say, yeah, we have two active ongoing insurgencies that we're fighting. And, you know, but they're in Sindh and in Baluchistan. And what's happening in the Pashtun areas in western Pakistan, where the Pakistani Taliban are from, where they get their base of support, where they operate, where they live. That was the Pashtun, that's the tribal areas. And we don't go in there, we don't bother them, and they don't bother us. And then you dig, after 9/11, after Al-Qaeda left Afghanistan and went to Pakistan, they went into those areas, and so the U.S. government put a lot of pressure on Pakistan to go into those areas, where they had, for decades, had this agreement with the people who lived there that, basically, you don't bother us, we don't bother you. We stay out of your affairs, and everything is good. And that worked for many, many decades, for several decades. But then, at our behest, at our coercement, we sent a Pakistani army, the army of the Punjab, basically, into these Pashtun areas. And so you're right, you always had these Pakistani Taliban, you had these people who were aligned with this uber-religious jihadist worldview. But you know what? The way I describe it, Scott, is say you've got one of those people live down the street from you, and you hear him rant and rave about these things. He's like your drunk uncle who screams about whatever at Thanksgiving dinner. But then what he starts preaching starts coming true, right? So now the Pakistani army is there, and they start harassing your family.
And now I got to stop you because of the dang break. But we'll be right back, everybody, with Matthew Ho. We're talking about making matters worse in Pakistan here. All over the TV from time to time today.
This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Matthew Ho. That's H-O-H. You can find him at the Huffington Post at MatthewHo.com. I think it is, right? Here somewhere. Yep, .com. And at the Huffington Post and, I already said that. It was the Center for whatever the hell is what I was looking for here. I got too many tabs. The Center for International Policy. That's CIPonline.org. Boy, what a shoddy introduction that was. Reintroduction. Okay, so where we left off, the break interrupted us, Matthew. We were talking about how the government of the so-called government of Pakistan really is kind of a federated state. How they kind of had a balance worked out with the federally administrated tribal areas, as they call them, for pretty much autonomy. You leave us alone, we'll leave you alone, and then somehow the Americans screwed that up.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry being so long-winded there, but absolutely. You know, they had this policy for decades, this balance, as you described. And we forced the Pakistanis, basically, to break that balance. We at our behest, and strong-armed behest, the Pakistani army violated that decades-long pact between the Pashtuns in the West and the government in Islamabad. And so what then occurred then was you had the Pakistani government interfering in these local affairs, and that began a whole series of issues and problems, many of them tribal, many of them ethnic, but from which an organization like the Pakistani Taliban benefit. And then once that begins, the cycle of violence begins, and the Pakistani army takes action as the Pakistani Taliban. They kill innocent Pashtuns. That adds to more support for the Pakistani Taliban. The Pakistani Taliban commits some barbaric act, and the Pakistani army is now forced to go on the offensive again. And so it just becomes a cycle where the only ones who are benefiting are, you know, the extremists. In this case, the American government and the Pakistani Taliban. And now here we are, basically 10, 11, 12 years later after this started, with 132 dead children in a school in Pakistan.
Right. Well, and you know, we got, there's two Shahzads I want to mention to you here. There's Salim Shahzad. Am I getting his name right? I think that's it. The writer for the Asia Times, who I interviewed him on the show, and he was writing about how the war was Al-Qaeda-izing the Taliban because the Arabs around, they had some experience. So they became, you know, got real top leadership roles. And then, but kind of force their more radical ideology on these more conservative Taliban types, you know, who are tend to be older and with less wild dreams of grandeur or whatever, whereas the Al-Qaeda guys really want to get work done and build a little caliphate there in Central Asia someday if they can, and all this kind of agenda that they kind of, you know, that all that bled together through the years of fighting together kind of thing. And then the other Shahzad I wanted to mention was Faisal yep. Shahzad, the Pakistani-American, who was extremely Americanized, was, you know, had a good job and a house and a wife and a car and a great education and all these things going for him, went to Pakistan, saw the aftermath of a drone strike on some of his extended family, or at least their neighborhood, I guess. I don't think any of his family were in it, but when he went to visit family, he saw the results of a drone strike, and he joined up the war on their side. And he tried, and luckily failed, but he tried to blow up Times Square full of innocent men, women, and children in response. So that's another way that this drone war has already blown back on us. And like I said, luckily we got away with his bomb being a fizzle, but it didn't have to be that way.
Yeah, and you know, and I want to encourage people to look up and read about Salim Shahzad. You know, he was murdered several years ago, I think 2010.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Reputedly by the Pakistani intelligence service. And I credit Shahzad with most of my understanding of what is occurring there. The book that was published after his death, really needed an editor. It wasn't that well edited a book, but, again, it seems as you, Scott, the understanding of how you now had Al Qaeda in these areas. You had this Pakistani Taliban. You then had the Pakistani army come in, and you had this perfect brew, this stew that allowed for Al-Qaeda to just basically create this Pakistani Taliban into an organization that had popular support. And then we come along and we keep bombing them. We keep sending more non-Pashtun troops in the area. And again, now here we are almost 2015, and the situation is as bad as it ever was, and with no resolution in sight. And it's just, this will continue to go on, I believe, for as long as we feel we have to be somehow trying to win over there, somehow trying to get one group to be victorious over another for some type of geopolitical strategy that eludes most people in terms of what the whole purpose of it is.
Well, of course, if there's any sense in it, if there's any, you know, deliberate planning in it, it's completely stupid. I think the best interpretation would be it's an accident, when they never really did try to force the Pakistanis to stop backing the Afghan Taliban, at the same time that we're just radicalizing the Pakistani Taliban, and we're backing the Indians and all of Pakistan's enemies in Afghanistan, which only, you know, gives them all the reason to go ahead and continue backing the Haqqani network and the whole thing. It makes sense as a perpetual motion machine for war, if that's what you want, and maybe that is what it is, but it seems more like they just don't know what the hell to do. I saw John Bolton on Fox News today, and the only lesson from all of this, from Iraq and Afghanistan, is see, you can't stay, and you can't leave ever, and Obama's learned that lesson now. See what happened? He left Iraq and it blew up in his face, so now he knows he can never leave Afghanistan, and that's why he's canceled the withdrawal by the end of the year, and we're staying for, as we already know, till 2024 and beyond.
My attitude is that they had no idea what they were doing in the early parts of the last decade. No idea what they were doing, and now at this point there are organizations making so much money off of this that it would be such a blow to them to leave, that they're doing everything they can to convince policymakers this is the right thing, or to go on the media and say, we need to keep doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be interesting to see what boards John Bolton sits on, where he gets his money from. Right. But then also, too, the other part then is that we can't leave. We can't change our policy because we would be admitting a mistake. We would be, if Barack Obama leaves, that means he is wrong, and that means the Republicans win, you know, so on and so forth. So, yeah, this was accidental. We didn't know what we were doing. And now it's such a calamity that there are some groups making a ton of money off of it, and others just don't want to leave for the sake of saving face.
Right. Yeah, of course, it's the same thing with the surge, too, where Petraeus admitted at one point, at least, that the success of the surge was to be measured in how much time could they add to what he called the Washington clock. So,
that's right.
In other words, they weren't really nation building over there. They were just trying to stay longer. That was the end, was the means.
Well, and that's what we saw in Afghanistan too. And there's, you know, maybe what we'll see is smoke and gun come out, but that's also a lot of what I believe went into the calculus behind Barack Obama's decision to escalate the Afghan war in 2009 was exactly that, was that I have to make it look like I'm trying. I have to make it look forth like we're putting forth an effort. So let's put forth this effort. Let's go expend these lives, expend this money, expend this treasure. And then we could say we did it, and then we can leave. We can declare victory and go home.
Right. All right, we got to go. Thanks very much. Matthew Ho, everybody.
Hey, have a good one, Scott.
Thanks. Read him at the Huffington Post. We'll be right back. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and this is my show. Let me click my right link here. Douglas Lucas is on the phone. His article at Vice from February is a good kind of roundup on this. Barrett Brown, it's about his new book. That's the wrong article. I clicked the wrong tab. I got too many tabs. Anyway, Douglas Lucas, I got him on another tab. Here he is. He's at douglaslucas.com and writes at riseup.net. Is that right? Welcome. How are you doing, Douglas?
Hi, how are you? My email address.
Oh, your phone sounds absolutely horrible all of a sudden.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to call you back. I don't know what happened.
All right.
God dang, did you guys hear that? What the hell? Sorry, everybody. Sometimes, god dang 20th century technology and everything, you know, these things happen even on live radio. Says here he's from Fort Worth. Blog. You there? You set?
Yeah, right here.
All right. All right. Well, we got telephone problems sometimes. Let's see what happens here. How about that? Douglas, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Okay. Yeah, that's much better. Riseup.net. I didn't get a chance to look. Is that where you write?
No, that's my email address. I'm a freelancer at, and I write for Who, What, Why.
Oh, for Who, What, Why. Okay, good.
Daily Dot, lots of different places.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I know, Christian Stork over there. That's cool.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. Okay, good deal. So, yeah, and he's great on this particular issue, too. Good segue here. Barrett Brown, now you have been attending his federal court sentencing today in Dallas, Texas. Is that correct?
Right. We just got out for the lunch recess, and we'll be going back in less than an hour.
Okay, so we don't know what he'll be sentenced to, but we do know that he's no longer facing 100 years, correct?
He's no longer facing 105 years or the 70 years that he was facing a little later in the trial. He's facing up to 8.5 years as a result of a plea deal that he took.
Right. And he took the plea deal because they were in order to let his mom off the hook because they were going to prosecute his mother, correct?
No, that's not correct. Yeah, they prosecuted his mother earlier in the case.
Oh, they already
got off with a misdemeanor, a fine of $1,000, and 6 months probation.
Oh, I thought that was part of the deal. Thanks for clearing that up for me. I admit I'm not read up on this. I hadn't.
But the prosecution of his mother really did play a role in infuriating him. The fact that they searched her house in March of 2012.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was what got him in so much trouble. That was the event that made him go on YouTube and threaten to dox the FBI agent, right?
Partially. He was also just fed up with the FBI's not returning his gear. Yeah, it was the raid by the FBI on his apartment and his mother's home in March of 2012.
Right. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's been a little while. But anyway, so the point being is he's facing 8.5. He pled guilty to what all charges now exactly?
He pled guilty to 3 counts. One was transmitting a threat in interstate commerce or something like that, basically threatening the FBI agent, the one who was actually testifying today and will continue to be on the stand probably after the lunch break. That was up to 5 years. He pled guilty to accessory after the fact to an unauthorized access of a computer for up to 2.5 years. And he pled guilty to misdemeanor of interference with a execution of a search warrant for up to 1 year, and the other 2 counts were felonies.
Now, on the unauthorized access, that was in regards to what? Was that in regards to copying and pasting the link from the chat room?
No, that was not. Those counts were dropped following a really good defense motion to dismiss that indictment, and the Electronic Frontier Foundation was about to submit a brief arguing against it, and the prosecution sort of said, okay, we give up, and drop those counts.
Mm-hmm. So what unauthorized access did he plead guilty to then?
He himself did not unauthorized access anything. It's an accessory after the fact.
Oh, an accessory to that, I see.
Yeah, accessory after the fact. And the one who committed the unauthorized access was Jeremy Hammond, and that's his access of the private intelligence firm Stratfor down in Austin. He hacked that organization in December 2011 as an FBI informant named Sabu, Handel Sabu, Hector von Sager watched on. So that all happened with the FBI's knowledge. They apparently sacrificed Stratfor, let Stratfor go down in order to whatever multiple, I mean, there's multiple theories. One is that they were trying to entrap WikiLeaks by selling the emails or watching Anonymous try to sell the emails or something like that.
Right.
There's multiple theories.
All right. Now, as far as the FBI agent's testimony today, what did he talk about?
The prosecution asked him to talk about a whole bunch of exhibits that the prosecution just entered into evidence apparently this morning. It was the first time the defense had seen this material, about 500 pages that was delivered to the defense this morning. So the defense tried to object to it all, or most of it, saying that it was not relevant. But the prosecution was saying, okay, these chat logs, these email quotes, these interview quotes are relevant conduct to Barrett Brown sentencing because they show his role in Anonymous as a strategist, as a, you know, some sort of leader, as a person who was pointing toward what places should be targeted, that sort of thing. So they're trying to paint, they're showing, you know, these logs, and there are many points where Brown arguably sort of gets into some sort of accessory or conspirator type vibe. But it's difficult to say because journalists are always going to be talking with their sources. And a lot of his communications are being really, in the exhibits, are being sort of misunderstood, I think, by the government to say, you know, I have some quotes right here. You know, actually, one of the examples was the government would quote him saying, well, you know, does he say he's an anarchist in this exhibit, you know, 34 or whatever it is? And the FBI agent, Robert Smith, would say, like, yes, he does. The defense actually objected at that point, saying, well, what's up with this anarchism? How is that relevant? You know, it's prejudicial.
Right.
The judge said, well, this isn't a jury trial, and I'm not intending to consider it in my sentencing, but let's just keep this show on the road. So it's really kind of strange that this, you know, here's another quote. I mean,
well, I want to go back to your previous thing there real quick. We're very short on time, but I just want to go over what you said there because it's extremely important for people to understand.
Yeah.
For a journalist to tell his source, yeah, get me some more stuff, is not a crime in the United States of America. Sorry to whoever wants to spin it otherwise.
It's a gray area, but it should not be a crime. I don't think there's soliciting for classified material can be considered a crime. It is BS though. It's where they can, you know, Brown said in one of the exhibits, we're the most effective process to smash the institutions that need smashing. Well, that's that the FBI agent was like, yeah, sure, that's what one of the things he said. But that's, you know, smash the institutions that need smashing. That's metaphorical. That's broad. That's a general statement.
Sure.
And the prosecution is trying to say that he's like a ringleader going around saying, you know, at one point the prosecution even filed a motion where they said that he and Anonymous secretly plotted to overthrow the government.
Well, I'm actually a little heartened to hear that the prosecution is so desperate in invoking this stuff. I hope that the judge sees that, like, wow, that's really all you guys got, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, anyway, all right. Well, we'll all keep our fingers crossed. Thanks so much, Douglas, for the coverage. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
That's Douglas Lucas, everybody. You can follow him on Twitter. We'll be right back in a sec. I'll tell you more. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, guys. So I'm Scott Horton, and a few things to wrap up here. First of all, when I say the entire American right is for torture, all I mean is that the polls say that it's a 50-50 split. And more or less, right-left is a 50-50 split in America. Now, obviously, you have people of principle all over the place. In every neighborhood, there's somebody who can think straight for a minute. But I'm talking generally speaking, so don't get your feelings hurt if you consider yourself a non-torture conservative. I know such creatures exist. There's no question about that. It's also true that the Bush era, continuing, has redefined conservatism. The old family values are gone. And now aggressive war and the unlimited impunity of our government's armed forces at home and abroad are their highest value. That is what conservatism is. Mostly the worship of the instruments of the state to be used to make things their way. And including even torturing people, which you would think is... You might think, if you're a libertarian, I guess, if you're a conservative who just got here in a time machine from 1997, you might think that opposition to torture would be a conservative value. George Washington outlawed it. That's pretty conservative. The Constitution outlaws it twice in the Bill of Rights. In Amendment Number 5, it says you can't be compelled to provide... evidence against yourself. That's a prohibition on their power to torture you. Oops. And in the Eighth Amendment, of course, it just forbids cruel and unusual punishment. Another outright ban on torture. Isn't that conservative? Jesus was tortured. That was the worst thing that happened to him. People like reenacting it. The measure of his sacrifice. Now, reenacting it as the Romans, as a measure of their impunity and strength, is the conservative value? Pardon me, if it seems like you got the passion all upside down. I don't know. Anyway, so, yes, I mean to paint with a broad brush. American conservatives love torture. They're torture mongers. Which means they're bad people. So, there you go. It's a dehumanizing term, isn't it, to call someone a conservative? Oh, you're one of those beasts from medieval times who thinks that torture is okay, huh? All right, well. It's like what they think they have to put up with, having immigrants in the country. No, that's the rest of us putting up with the conservatives. Beastly barbarians on the inside of the gates. Anyway. So that's why I broad brush it, because I meant to. And I know there are exceptions, but anyway, I know the exceptions, understand. And now to the question of stupidity or the plan. There's a debate going on in the chat room. It's an important debate. And yes, it could be a push-pull. Good point. I don't know, though. I don't have much faith in Americans anymore. Believable to me without double-checking. But the stupidity or the plan. There's even a punk rock song like that from 20 years ago or something. It's a perennial kind of thing. And here's the thing about it. You can have people with unlimited power and pure malevolence and self-interest, corruption and greed and hatred and bigotry as all of their motives. And they can all still be dumber than rocks. They can all be so dumb, they might as well have an Israeli hand up their ass telling them what to say and who to bomb. And, you know, like George Carlin says, this is the best we can do, folks. This is who the American people are. You can say you hate politicians, but they come from your neighborhood. They come from your church. They come from your school. They come from your business. You vote for them over and over again. And I know the state is not us, but the people who run it are. You know? They are. And, you know, just like with the poll on Mike Brown, the American people, they vote to ratify this evil over and over again. You arguing that they're not stupid? Oh, yeah, whatever Dick Cheney wants to do. Thank God the adults are in charge and know what to do. And it's Dick Cheney. Remember how Dick Cheney was going to waltz right into Iraq? They're going to greet us as liberators. He's going to have 60 bases forever to threaten everybody else from. And it's going to be a cakewalk. And the Iraqi people hardly even existed in his plan. What are they going to do? They're going to sit there and be good little decorations is what they're going to do. The empire's moving into Mesopotamia. And then what happened? He got his ass beaten and kicked out. His plan didn't work. He's the definition of evil. He's straight out of the Nazi party, Dick Cheney. He's a guilty war criminal. He's also dumber than crap. And you know what? If he got the best and the brightest from the Ford Foundation and the Brookings Institution to help him, you know what they would do? They would advise him to invade Iraq. That's what O'Hanlon and, I always forget the other guy's name. You know, the clones. The Brookings Institution warmonger guys, O'Hanlon and the curly-haired dude. Damn it. O'Hanlon and the other guy. It's the other guy in O'Hanlon. That's what's messing me up. O'Hanlon's name is supposed to go second. Anyway, they're the liberals. And they're all for war. All of them are for doing the wrong thing. Doing the obviously stupid thing. Because they're stupid. I would hate for anyone to think that I'm trying to let anyone off the hook and go, oh, poor George Bush just stumbling into accidentally killing a million people. Oh, no. He's as responsible as he could possibly be. And all the people who followed his illegal and immoral orders to carry them out as well. What do you mean we're taking the side of the Bader Brigade? I'm leaving. They didn't say that. They did it. They're guilty. It's not an excuse for anyone. It's just an extra charge against them at all. Yeah, look at, you know, I read this thing in the Washington Post where Susan Rice had a meeting at the State Department on a Saturday and got out the white piece of paper and the magic marker and said, okay, let's reimagine American foreign policy, everybody. And then so there is this blinded idiot, this blinkering, damned fool, Susan Rice? Susan Rice, really? For crying out loud, Connelly's a Rice. Well, no. But Susan Rice and her deputies, and they go, yeah, you know what we should do? We should just kind of forget about the Middle East and move on over to pivoting over to China. Like, are you guys not seeing the rise of the Islamo-fascist caliphate that was make-believe until you guys invaded Libya and helped the Mujahideen in Syria? Are you not seeing this? You think you're pivoting to China right now? These people, basically, they could teach foreign policy at junior college. I'm not saying they couldn't do that. I'm just saying those are the smartest guys you got. I used to, when I was younger, imagine that there's some oak table where the skull and bones patriarchs have the final veto power. They have the final say. They set the agenda, and they decide who has to stay or go. Psh, nonsense. It's all a bunch of... It's an imperial court. There's your conspiracy right there, the U.S. government. And everyone who's trying to use it to hurt anyone else so that they can win. That's the plot. It's called the executive branch. The secret society that rules the planet. And is really, really bad at it. Okay. I like addressing that stuff. It's kind of fun. And then, yeah, as far as the Islamic State, as long as I got a minute, I gotta admit, it looks like I'm gonna end up owing Gareth Porter the $10. Because I was sure they would send in the army, or the Marine Corps, really, is what I was predicting by now, to take Mosul. And I just did not really, I should have anticipated that, you know, the news cycle, something could happen that'll wash ISIS right out of the news for the rest of the year. It turned out that was true. And thankfully, it's police killings of unarmed Americans, mostly blacks, or not mostly blacks, but proportionally mostly blacks. But anyway, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Americans being killed by cops all the time. More than 1,000 a year by last year by one count, certainly north of 500. So I'm glad that that's getting a lot of attention, and I'm glad that it's taking attention away from ISIS. But I'm still predicting the worst for next spring, so get thinking about what we can do to organize to try to do something to put all to that before it's way, way, way too late. And now I'm done. See you tomorrow, guys. Thanks for listening.
Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.